A studio lot reflects in the gold outline of a shield-shaped logo in the sky. Warner Brothers Pictures. A Time Warner company.
You wake up in the morning. You hear the work bell ring.
A narrow road weaves along the side of a mountain under a twilight sky.
You see the same old thing. Food upon a table.
In the distance, the headlights of a lone car snake around the corner of the mountainside. The car cruises up the mountain road into the foreground and out of sight.
But you better not complain, boy.
The lines in the road zip past the side of the vintage sports car as the view rises up the doorframe to reveal a driver and his portly passenger singing along to the music.
Let the midnight special shine a light on me. Let the midnight special shine a light on me. Let the midnight special.
The men smile and boogie in the car as they cruise through the night.
Let the midnight special shine a ever-loving light on me.
Yonder come his roses.
The headlights shine forward into the dark night. The car passes a sign indicating a winding road for miles ahead.
Boy, look at the clothes.
Let the midnight special shine a light on me.
Light on me.
Let the midnight special shine a ever-loving light on me.
Yeah, what? Let the midnight...
I think your tape,
Oh, Jesus.
Got eaten.
Jesus, that was good.
Yeah, they're great. Three.
This thing's brand new.
How about the radio?
Radio doesn't work. You can't get anything out here. No entertainment. Now there's no entertainment. Damn it.
Well, guess we just have to talk to each other, huh?
We talked to each other already.
Yeah, I know where you're from.
Hey. Want to see something real scary?
Sure.
I love this, okay?
Yeah, what?
We're driving along here, right?
Yeah.
Imagine not running out of gas. We have plenty of gas, right?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. What are those gravel beds up ahead? They're going to fly up and knock out our lights. Uh-oh.
Okay,
blackness. Oh, my goodness. Why, there could be nuns ahead. We wouldn't even see them. Isn't this amazing?
Yeah, yeah, I don't know whether it's too safe.
I used to play chicken and see how far we could drive without someone, either the passenger or the driver, going stop.
Well, I don't know.
God,
I think
you
better just...
Who's chicken, huh? Is that a bear up there, huh?
Huh?
Uh-oh, more pebbles. Oh, my goodness, it looks like they're out permanently this time.
This is dangerous.
No, it's the road straight. It's just kind of scary. Well, what is that up ahead?
Someone might come up ahead.
Big, huge squirrel. Ooh. Chicks love that.
That's scary enough.
I know, I like it. Hey, you like trivia?
Yeah.
Okay, want to play TV theme songs?
Sure.
You know how to play that? I'll hum a theme song. If you guess it, you get to hum one. If I guess it, I get to have it back.
Okay.
If you get three in a row, you win.
Okay, I'm good at that.
Okay, I'll start. Ba ba da da. Ha 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 ha. Ba da da da. Ha ha ha. Want a hint?
Sea hunt.
Sea hunt, go.
All right. Bum, 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 bum,
Perry Mason.
You got it. Bonanza. All right.
Bill McCoy.
No.
Fred Gwynne was in
Beverly Hills Billies. No.
Car 54.
That's it.
All right. Thanks for the Fred Gwynne.
Absolutely.
All right. How about this one? Ba-ba-ba-dum. Know it? Ba-ba-ba-bum. Look at that fossil. It's stuck over there in the tar. Bum-bum. Look at that old man. He looks like an old ape. Bum-bum. What is it?
No.
Look at that old bone. It could be worth a bucks. What is it?
I don't know.
Look at those two apes. This must be where they lived. Bum, bum. Look at that city. Let's continue to dig. What is it?
Really don't know.
It's National Geographic. National Geographic.
Okay. All right. Okay, I got one for you.
Okay. Yes. What is it? but you're doing it great.
Sounds
like it was on CBS.
Remember
the Twilight Zone with Burgess Meredith? Remember, he loved to read, and there was a nuclear war, and he had no friends anyway, and he was down in the basement library. Yes, he was the last man. He broke his glasses.
Yeah.
This thing freaked me out. When I was 7 years old, I bought another pair of glasses just in case that would happen.
Oh, those shows, they were so good. They were so scary.
Yeah. Oh, great.
They were great. Remember the one where the guy had the stopwatch? Somebody in a bar gave him a stopwatch, and he was this real obnoxious guy, and he took the stopwatch, and he hit it, and everybody else in time froze but him.
That's an Outer Limits.
No, that was a zone.
That's an Outer Limits.
That was a zone.
Oh, they had one about the mannequins that got 2 weeks off and turned into humans, and they were allowed to go out and shop for 2 weeks on their own, and then this one came back, and it was over 2 weeks, and the other mannequins went, come over here for a minute, and turned her into plastic.
Boy, they were scary. They were great.
I loved it.
Hey, you want to see something really scary?
You bet.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, this is really, really scary now.
I trust you.
Okay, pull the car over.
Pull the car over?
Ooh. You want to see it?
Well, show me while I'm driving.
No, I can't. I can't tell you about it. It's only take a couple of seconds.
All right, 2 seconds, okay?
Okay.
What is it?
Just pull it over.
Okay.
I'll show you.
All right.
The driver pulls the car to the side of the road, and the portly hitchhiker turns to face him.
Okay.
Scare me.
Are you ready?
Okay, go ahead.
The portly guy wears a goofy smile before ducking away to hide his face. The driver watches eagerly.
What are you doing?
A ghoulish monster turns back around and strangles him. The view from outside the car scrolls up to the starry night sky above. A wooden doorframe floats through space.
You unlock this door with a key of imagination. Beyond it is another dimension. A dimension of sound. A dimension of sight. A dimension of mind. You're moving into a land of both shadow and substance, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the Twilight Zone.
A title, Twilight Zone, the movie. The view from the starry sky lowers again, and descends upon a strip mall featuring a bar called the Tender Trap. Neon signs advertise dancing and cocktails. A car pulls up and parks out front.
You're about to meet an angry man, Mr. William Connor, who carries on his shoulder a chip the size of the national debt. This is a sour man, a lonely man, who's tired of waiting for the breaks that come to others, but never to him. Mr. William Connor, whose own blind hatred is about to catapult him into the darkest corner of the Twilight Zone.
Hey! Hey! Bill!
The man eases into the bar and takes a seat next to two of his friends.
How you doing?
I'm okay.
Can't stay long. My wife's relatives from Florida are coming over for dinner. Great.
Huh. Hey, girl, another beer over here.
Bill, you look kind of cranky this evening.
Yeah, I'm pissed all right.
Uh-oh.
Remember the guy Goldman?
He didn't get promoted?
William shakes his head.
I gave it to that Jew bastard.
A waitress leaves a bill.
Why don't you come over here? Cheer me up. I need it.
Just drink your beer.
He pulls another waitress into his lap.
What about you? You want to cheer me up?
Don't touch me.
Touch me. Okay.
I think she likes you, Bill.
Can't believe it, you know? I can't.
Bill.
Drink your beer. Relax.
What do you mean, relax? They give Goldman my promotion, you're telling me to relax. You know what that would have meant to me? An extra $6,000 a year that I'd earn. You know, them kikes. They always get more money, you know that much.
How long has Goldman been there?
So what if he's been there longer than me? So what? I'm better than him. I worked hard for that promotion. What happens? They give it to some Jew. And what else do the hell they want, for Christ's sake? They own everything as it is.
Well, Bill, the Jews don't own everything.
The Arabs won't let them.
Arabs, what the hell is that? Just a nigger wrapped up in a sheet.
He's on a roll now.
I'm gonna tell you something. I don't know what's the matter with this country, but it's getting tougher and tougher to earn a living. You know why? I'll tell you why. Because of the Jews, because of the blacks, because of the Orientals.
You're ranting, Bill.
Yeah, I'm ranting. Why not? You know who owns my house? Jap Bank. I'll tell you something else. Niggas live not more than 6 blocks from my house. 6 blocks.
A black man leans over.
Excuse me, mister. Have you got a problem?
Yeah, I got a lot of problems.
Look, I really don't care what you gentlemen think, as long as we don't have to listen to it.
It's okay, no problem. My friend is a little upset, that's all. I got some bad news today.
The black patron stares for a moment, nods politely, then rejoins his table with his friends. William's friend turns back to his own group.
Trying to get us killed?
I just finished telling you that some Jew got my job. Niggas live in my neighborhood. You getting embarrassed? You want to leave? You want me to hold it down? What? Hey, don't give me that. I'm going to tell you something. I love this country, damn it. And I fought for Korea. And my country paid me to kill gooks.
Hey.
But those same gooks now own my house. I needed that job. I really needed that promotion. I was counting on the extra money. I understand. The Jews are rich. What the hell they want with my job anyway?
Hey, Bill, I know Goldman. You can't exactly call him rich.
You understand what the hell I'm talking about, do you? I'm trying to tell you that I'm better than a Jew. I'm better than some African spear chucker. I'm better than some gook because I'm an American. I'm an American. Does that mean anything anymore?
Hold it down, huh?
Now you hold it down.
How about please hold it down?
How about please hold this?
He shoves his way past a waitress and out of the bar.
Hey, Bill, wait a minute. Bill.
Yeah, I'm real sorry about your boy, man.
As Bill wanders back outside, he loses all sense of place. He's no longer standing near the bar. As he looks around, he takes in a vandalized shop with anti-Jewish graffiti. Behind him is a propaganda poster with a swastika. Nazi flags hang over the old brick street, otherwise empty besides Bill. Bill spins around trying to understand his place in the rundown village. A military jeep works its way down the street toward him. Nazi soldiers point to Bill and pull the vehicle over in front of him. Two uniformed men climb out and address Bill.
Schauen Sie mal diesen komischen Vogel an, Kollege.
Da haben wir uns ja einen merkwürdigen Kerl gefunden.
Und dieser nette rote Binder hier.
Ja, der sieht ja aus, als ob er gerade aus der Klapsmühle gekommen wäre.
Où allez-vous? Qui êtes-vous?
What?
Ihre Papiere! Huh? Du Papier, du Swiss.
Wait a minute. Hey, that's my wallet. Hold it. That's my wallet.
A man pulls Bill's credit card out and looks to his partner in confusion.
Was ist das? Wofür ist das?
That's a credit card, for Christ's sake.
They pull out his ID.
Was das?
Now look, that's my license. That's my wallet. That's my credit card.
Sind Sie Engländer?
Huh?
Was tun Sie hier?
He goes, give
sind
me
Sie
a
Amerikaner? Card.
Huh?
Warum sind Sie hier? Was tun Sie hier? Was tun Sie hier?
Wait a minute.
Wait a minute!
As the soldiers drag Bill toward the jeep, he breaks free.
Halt! Stehen bleiben oder schieße!
Bill runs, and one of the soldiers fires at him. A second shot hits Bill in the arm, and he keeps running. The Nazis chase him into an alley, and Bill finds a hiding place in the dark under a pile of trash. The soldiers split up. The black leather boots of the soldiers press their way slowly through the alley. Bill watches through a crack in his hiding place as they pass. The Nazis come out on the other end of the alley without finding him. One raises a whistle to his lips. Bill looks around nervously as he listens to the commotion. He lifts a broken pallet off his head as he sneaks out of his hiding place, hobbling to his feet and holding his wounded arm. He limps through the alley as blood soaks his sleeve. Glancing around nervously, he eases into a door in the side of a building. He closes the door behind him to reveal the barren entryway of a horribly run-down building. He listens as vehicles drive past outside. He tries a door, but it doesn't budge, so he heads up a skinny flight of stairs instead. He reaches another door and hears mumbling from the other side. He opens to a family eating dinner.
Lady, help me, please.
A woman looks around nervously as her family looks to her for answers.
I've been shot. I don't know where I am, lady. Can you help me, lady? Look at this here. I've been shot.
She cautiously backs away from him toward an open window.
I don't know what's happened.
She sees four Nazis running by in the street below.
Please, lady, shh.
Il est ici! Le juif est ici! Le juif que vous cherchez!
Tu commences à chaper!
Le juif est ici!
He books it out of the room as a military jeep pulls up outside. He flees into the hallway. Below, soldiers have already started filing in. They hurry up the stairs to him, and he rushes back into the family's unit and blocks the door with a heavy cabinet. Bill climbs out the window and looks down to the street below. He eases himself onto a narrow ledge outside. Bill sidles across the ledge out of sight from the window as the soldiers force their way in. Bill hides at a corner. Nazis surround the windows on either side, but one falls out and lands on the street.
Halten Sie das Feuer zurück! Zurück vom Fenster!
Dozens of Nazi soldiers surround him on the street. Two officers take turns firing up at him. They miss.
Der Hosenknopf. Jetzt fängt an zu schwitzen, nicht?
Blutet.
Löcher in den Anzug, nicht?
Bill falls as he tries to dodge. He does not land on the street below, but instead in a strange patch of dirt. Hands roll him onto his back to reveal Ku Klux Klan members with burning torches.
We got you now, nigga.
The Klan members pick him up and drag him by his shoulders to a large burning cross. White hooded robes congregate around. A man in a flannel outfit restrains Bill.
This nigga's got a gold watch. You stole this, didn't you, boy?
Where am I?
I stare back from behind a hood.
Look, I didn't do anything wrong. What are you doing to me?
Hang the coon, son of a bitch.
Are you crazy? You're insane. You're all crazy!
Well, see?
Okay,
look out.
I didn't do anything wrong. I didn't do anything wrong. What are you doing to me?
Shut up, nigger!
I'm a white man. What the hell's the matter with you? I'm white!
As the flannel man hangs a noose over a tree, Bill kicks him and manages to free himself. A hooded Klan member gets pushed into the cross and his entire robe goes up in flames.
The nigger's getting away!
Bill holds his still bleeding arm as he runs through the country night. He looks behind him to see Klansmen loading guns and freeing attack dogs from the beds of trucks. The dogs pull desperately on their leashes as they bark after Bill. Out of places to run, Bill makes it to the end of a short dock on a pond. He dives into the water. The Klansmen run alongside the shore and aim shotguns at Bill. Bill ducks underwater as they fire at him. He comes up for air and immediately goes back under. The water remains still as the Klansmen look over the pond from behind their shotguns. Bill pokes his head above the surface and his eyes dart around the night air. He slowly rises further out from the water as he takes in his new surroundings. He wipes his face with one blood-stained hand. He wades through waist-high water in some kind of jungle. Tropical plants lean over the bank around him. He quickly turns in fear. Panicking, he looks for a place to hide. He sees some tall grasses and thick leaves poking out of the water near the shore and tucks himself away behind the foliage. A small band of Asian soldiers wades into the water nearby. Bill glances over the surface of the water and notices a snake easing its way in his direction. The serpent flicks its tongue at Bill mere inches from his face. Bill remains perfectly still, and it moves on, its massive body trailing behind it across the surface of the water. Bill holds still as he waits for the soldiers to pass. He turns to see American soldiers wading into the water nearby.
Tony's out there, man. I know it.
Be cool, man. Don't get your nuts in a bunch.
He's right, man. Something's moving.
Yeah, I don't want no VC up my ass, man.
Hey, shut up!
Bill comes out of hiding to address the Americans and they raise their guns at him.
I'm American!
The American soldiers fire toward Bill and in every direction into the jungle. Bill dives away.
Guys, we shouldn't have shot Lieutenant Niedermeyer!
One soldier eases forward slowly and removes a grenade attached to his uniform. He pulls the pin and lobs it forward. The grenade plops into the water right next to Bill. Bill gets launched out of the water. He flies through the air back into the Nazi city, slamming into the concrete facade of a government building. Swastikas fly on hanging banners. As he limps away, he passes a few armed soldiers. He's shot again, and he collapses. Later, two armed soldiers haul him away.
Look, I want to speak to the commanding officer. I demand to speak to the commanding officer, you hear me? I demand to speak to the commanding officer!
The Nazis pin Bill to a wall and slap him with a patch of the Star of David. They continue on, dragging him through the streets. At a train, they haul a boxcar door open. The soldiers wrestle Bill into a train car and forcefully lock the door behind him. Bill looks up to find a group of elderly Jewish prisoners staring down at him. As they gaze down at him with cold stoic faces, Bill's eyes soften in sympathy. Mustering his strength, Bill pulls himself to his feet. He looks out a slot on the paneling of the train and sees his car parked outside the bar, and his friends standing outside it. His friends don't notice him, and the train lurches as it starts to carry him away. Fade to black. A view falls on a retirement home.
It is sometimes said that where there is no hope, there is no life. Case in point. The residents of Sunnyvale Rest Home, where hope is just a memory. But Hope just checked into Sunnyvale, disguised as an elderly optimist who carries his magic in a shiny tin can.
Vitamin A is for the scalp, the hair, vision, and teeth. Vitamin B is for the hair and mucous membranes. Vitamin C is for the circulatory system. Very important for that part. And let's not forget calcium for good, strong bones and teeth. Before we get to that, though, I always recommend a little lemon juice in the diet.
Good diet.
Healthy senior citizens. Now, to E. This is an important one. If you've enjoyed healthy sex throughout your life, there's no reason why you can't continue to enjoy well into your 80s. Now, I have some special exercises for you.
That's Leo Conroy.
Right in your chair.
That's his kid. He's in real estate.
Well, first, lean down over your lap. That's right. Arms hanging loosely. Good. Now, roll your spine up.
Two seniors look out a window at the Conroy family outside by the street.
You said maybe this week I could come visit.
I wish you could, Pop, but it's bad timing this week.
We really have to be going now.
I understand.
Maybe next week.
The elderly Mr. Conroy holds two suitcases as his family leaves him to return to their car.
You're going to be late for the game. Chef has to.
Mr. Conroy walks out to the street, suitcases in hand, to watch them leave.
Bye-bye, Pop. So long.
He forces a smile as they start driving away. He soon drops the smile and turns to hobble back to the retirement home. From inside, the two men watch him slowly return.
Every second Saturday, carries those cases down to his kid's car. And every second Saturday, he carries them back upstairs again and unpacks.
Now, the senior residents gather in the communal space to watch Jeopardy.
The answer is, it's been nicknamed Scourge of the Sons of Han because of its perennial flooding.
Don't say it, Edgy, I'm thinking.
What is the Yellow River?
Get some table.
Those damn kids, they've been told not to play around here. Old people need their rest.
Well, they're just playing, Mr. Conroy. No harm done. I wish I could go out there and play with them.
Why don't you, Mrs. Dempsey?
Because, Mr. Bloom, she is old.
You're never too old to play, Mr. Conroy. You see, when I rest, I rest.
Is this your first time in an old age home, Bloom?
No, actually, Mr. Conroy, I've been in 6 or 8 of them. Tell me, Mrs. Dempsey, if you could go out there and play with those children tonight, what would you want to play?
Well, I used to love all kinds of games, especially Jack's.
I used to be elementary school Jack champion.
He and his 500 hats lived in the kingdom of Did.
Don't say it, A.G., I'm thinking.
But if I could tell my body now what to do, I would dance.
Who is Bartholomew Cubbins?
Who is Bartholomew Cubbins?
Good for you, Bartholomew Cubbins.
I would be honored if you would dance with me, Mrs. Dempsey.
I would love. Oh, fuck that.
I would like to run again.
Paul, this is Amadeus. Remember how to use it?
Once more.
Oh, but I wouldn't give just to be hitting puberty again.
Oh,
remember this, Mrs. Dempsey. Not last night, but the night before, 24 robbers came knocking at my door. As I ran out, they ran in, and this is what they said to me.
You had a full life, sweetheart. Don't go sloppy on me now. And put on the tune, huh? A good Jew only goes barefoot when someone has died.
I'm not that kind of Jew.
Well, I am. Put him on. Mr. Weinstein, what were you like as a boy?
Oh, I love to climb. Anything, like a cat, I could climb.
I always wanted to be Douglas Fairbanks.
Oh, you still do, Mr. A.G.?
I broke more bed springs and bones by jumping from my dresser to the bed and out the window.
Me, I like being old. My son has promised to have me frozen.
You're already frozen, popsicle head. The sugar there.
What about you, Mr. Bloom? What did you play?
My game was kick the can.
Oh, that was a boy's game. My late husband, Jack Dempsey.
Not the fighter.
Oh, not the fighter. Not the fighter. Jack Dempsey was the most gentle man who ever walked on the earth. Jack Dempsey loved that game. He absolutely loved it.
Oh, what is the point of all this talk? Why are you dredging all this up? It isn't healthy.
Birdie with the yellow bill hopped upon my windowsill. Cocked a shiny eye and said, Ain't you ashamed
to sleep yet? Marbles. Now there was a game, huh? Yeah.
Life was so simple and gentle when I was a little girl. People took care of me.
But they take care of you here. Miss Cox takes great care of you. Doesn't let you do a thing.
Oh, but I had lots of friends and toys.
Toys? You want toys?
Toys.
Why, they have toys here to last you the rest of your life. And friends?
Oh, yes, friends.
Why, Mr. Bloom here is trying to make friends. Trying to stir them all up, aren't you, Bloom?
The day we stop playing is the day we start getting old. Started watching the clock, waiting for the days to hurry up and end, counting the years. We always had something to look forward to. Another dawn, another day, another summer, another game of kick the can. Kick the can. So who's playing?
What?
Starting up a game of kick the can. Who's playing?
Boom. When is the last time you fell down and couldn't get up by yourself, huh? How dare you ask them to go out there and risk the little bit of life they have left in them?
Life is risk, Mr. Conroy. I'm not asking anybody to do anything that I'm not willing to do.
Well, I agree with that.
Maybe if we played kick the can, you'd get a little hold of that magic we all been missing.
Marvelous.
Little hold on youth.
Look, their bones are old and will break if they try to run. Their hearts are old, their lungs are old.
Oh, Miss Cox would never allow us to go out there and play, Mr. Bloom. It's against the rules.
Rules? Huh? Did rules ever stop a child?
No.
You gonna let rules stop you from the chance of being young again?
Oh, no.
You see, this old man still has a little magic left in him. And if you believe, I can promise to make you all feel like children.
You're making promises they can't keep.
Mrs. Dempsey, I want to see you dance.
Oh, I'd love it.
And I want to see you climb, Mr. Weinstein.
Like a Quetzalcoatl climb.
We'll break the rules. What can they take away from us? We have already lost.
When are you thinking of playing, Mr. Bloom?
Tonight.
Don't bother to wake me up.
Mr. Conroy turns away with a scowl while Mr. Bloom cheerfully heads up the stairs. The other seniors watch him go with childlike light in their eyes. Later, Mr. Conroy sleeps in his bed. He shares a room with other seniors. His door creaks open and light shines on his face as Mr. Bloom pokes his head in. Bloom looks around the space, and with a smile, tiptoes around Mr. Conroy's bed. Mr. Bloom approaches other men and gently jostles them awake.
It's time. It's time.
It feels like midnight, as I recall.
I feel as if we are out for now.
Outside in the night air, Mr. Bloom polishes a shiny tin can. He gathers with a half dozen seniors before tossing the can into the air. It thuds onto the ground. He turns his back and closes his eyes as the others hide.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
With a bright smile, he opens his eyes and starts looking for his friends. He pokes his head over a bush.
I see you, AG!
Tally-ho! Tally-ho!
While Bloom is distracted, someone else kicks the can. While Conroy sleeps, the seniors realize they've all been turned into kids.
What? Is that you, Harry? Such a little miscite.
Wake up, look how short I am.
Play, play, you wanted to play? Go play.
Beware the thrust of my steel.
Weinstein climbs the trellis. AG prances and pretends his cane is a sword.
Birdie with a yellow bill hopped upon my windowsill, cocked his shiny eye and said, ain't you shiny, sleepy head?
I'll be the boy, and I'll catch you.
No, Mr. AG, you stay away.
Not now.
Mr. Bloom watches the kids play.
Not last night, but the night before. 24 robbers came knocking at my door. I ran out, they ran in.
May I have your dance?
AG kisses the back of Dempsey's hand. Mr. Bloom pulls up a chair and glows with excitement as he watches his friends dance around the patio. Mr. Bloom claps and laughs to himself. AG rushes over to him.
Sir, I don't wish to appear ungrateful, but why didn't you come too?
I found out a long, long time ago. I wanted to be my own true age and try and keep a young mind. Your wishes come true. You're children again. You got your whole life before you.
But my life was hard.
I had a swell life. I could do 60 years standing on my head.
I'm cold. Where are we going to spend the night? Who's going to take care of us?
No problem for us. We'll just knock on our son's door and say, "Let us in, Mari. We're your parents."
Now, wait a minute. Let's think this over. I mean, we're talking about being young again. We're talking about sex.
But Jack Dempsey isn't here. I'll never meet him. My ring, my wedding ring, it fell off. Oh, please, I didn't ask to be young again. All I wanted to do is dance. I can be old and dance.
I'm not going to school again.
I remember the night that my father died. We laid him out and sent all the children outside. I saw Halley's Comet fly over. I don't want to lose all the people that I loved again.
I was too young to see Halley's Comet. I was going to see it when I was 80 years old.
Well, that's only two birthdays away, Mrs. Dempsey. Would you like to see it at 8 or 80?
80.
Mr. Bloom grins, nodding brightly, and slides Dempsey's ring back onto her outstretched hand. She smiles politely.
Thank you.
Well, you can always go inside and go back to bed. Maybe a few old folks had a little of that magic still left in you. You could wake up back in your old nice bodies. But with fresh young minds.
Fresh young minds. Young minds.
Fresh young minds.
Fresh young minds.
Yeah.
The kids creep back inside. Weinstein tiptoes into his room past a sleeping Mr. Conroy.
Harry, wait. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. I like being young.
The five kids file in, A.G. bringing up the rear. He jumps into his bed, waking Mr. Conroy up in the process. Mr. Conroy looks at the kids in pure confusion. A.G. salutes him.
Popsicle head!
I'm shaking that.
The kids in the bed. The kids in the bed. Kids.
Conroy stumbles out of the room as Mr. Bloom smiles and laughs. Mr. Conroy leads Ms. Cox into the room, but the kids are all old again.
Were they? There were kids in the beds.
Good evening, Ms. Cox.
Well, they're old now.
A.G. is still a kid.
Tally-ho! Welcome to Sherwood, m'lady. What's the guy? The greetings from you.
What are you doing in here, you little ragamuffin? How dare you come in here at this hour of the night and frighten these people?
A.G. does a handspring over a bed and starts to climb out an open window. Mr. Weinstein smiles. Mr. Conroy gapes in curiosity and slowly approaches the boy.
Please, take me with you. I want to go too.
You can't come with me, Leo. You'll have to stay with yourself. There's a destiny that shapes our ends, rough-hewn though it may be. I'm sorry. Well, let's away!
I'm ready now.
Conroy's expression crumples.
I'm ready.
Wonderful being young again. Beware the thrust of my
my steel. Tally ho!
Conroy's friends gently place their hands on his shoulders as he stares sadly out the window, watching Agee go. The seniors gather and share a smile as they stand together. Ms. Cox steps up to the window. With a placid gesture, she hesitantly draws the window curtains closed. The other seniors pleasantly keep staring through the curtains to the outside. Daytime. Outside in the grass, Mr. Conroy playfully kicks a tin can. He clumsily kicks it around trying to reclaim his youth. He looks up with a smile as Mr. Bloom walks down the steps from the house with a briefcase in hand. Mr. Bloom stops partway down the steps to watch Conroy awkwardly kick the can, bouncing it between his feet. Mr. Bloom dons a hat and smiles directly at us into the camera.
You'll get it.
An elder excitedly leads a gardening team into the yard.
Tomatoes are on the fence.
We go to what? The fence. We can save. You. We go and see that lake.
Let's ask Murray to come along.
Let's ask Mr. Conroy. He could bring his grandchild. Children
Mr. love. Mr. Agee! Has anyone seen Mr. Agee? Hannah?
Three of the elders head out with a picnic basket. Mr. Bloom cheerfully follows them out, grinning from ear to ear. He knocks a stick against the picket fence as he heads off down the street.
Why are you sitting around moping, sitting around hoping? Just listen to me. I'm sure that you will agree.
He twirls the stick between his fingers as he rounds a street corner. He finds himself outside a new retirement home and saunters up to a downtrodden man. A nurse approaches.
Mr. Bloom?
In person.
Oh, wonderful. We were expecting you. Excuse me, ladies and gentlemen, our new guest has arrived.
Bloom tips his hat cordially as he introduces himself to his new friends. The view slowly rises up to the sky through the leaves billowing in the wind, then fades to white. Now, the view falls to a young woman driving a car alone.
Portrait of a woman in transit. Helen Foley, age 27. Occupation, school teacher. Up until now, the pattern of her life has been one of unrelenting sameness, waiting for something different to happen. Helen Foley doesn't know it yet, but her waiting has just ended.
Okay, I give up. Where am I?
Well, you're not lost. It looks like you missed a turn off at Clifford Mill. Right there. Yeah. Okay. Half mile down the road is a gas station. That's Beaumont. You hang a left and you go four blocks. The highway cuts right in front of it. You can't miss it. You probably go...
In the diner, a boy smacks an arcade machine.
Hey, kid. Easy on the machinery.
It doesn't work right.
Kid, I don't build the games. I just keep the quarters. Why don't you stick another quarter and maybe it'll work better. See, the highway splits right outside of town. It goes over the uppercut misses
and a right. Walter, the kid is screwing up the TV.
Hey, it's his quarter. The TV's free, you know.
Yeah, I got 20 bucks on this.
Lots of luck.
So, where you headed?
Willoughby.
Hey, nice town. You got a job set up there or what?
No, not here.
Where you from?
Homewood.
Nice town.
Do you say so?
Hello. Yeah. Hey, Walter. It's your wife.
Your wife.
Thanks.
The TV goes fuzzy every time the boy hits the arcade machine. It cannot hurt him. There's a left
hand. At Bradford. Okay.
Hey, Charlie. Hey, come on, man. Take it easy. Take it easy.
That's enough.
What's going on here? I hear what happened.
A grown man pushes the kid down from the arcade game. Helen scowls at him.
Hey, look, I don't know what happened, lady. Whatever happened, I'm sorry.
Yes, well... Here.
Hey, forget about the sandwich. No charge.
Terrific. Nice town.
That was real good.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Helen leaves the diner and heads back out to her car. She climbs in, starts it up, and throws it into reverse. She backs into the kid on his bike. His front tire is bent.
Oh, no. Look at that. Look, I'll give you some money. Can you get it fixed?
Yeah. Oh, could you maybe give me a ride home?
Sure.
Helen drives the boy down a narrow road in the middle of nowhere.
Oh, you live all the way out here. I bet your parents are worried about you.
Not really.
No?
Today's my birthday. They don't even care about that.
Really? Wow. What a crummy birthday.
It's okay. I made a friend.
Me too.
I'm Anthony.
Helen Foley.
I'm very glad to meet you, Helen.
Thank you.
They shake hands, and he smiles up at her from the passenger seat. They pass desert brush as the car cruises down the road, and finally comes to a stop outside a large house tucked away behind trees. Anthony and Helen step out of the car, and she marvels up at the house.
You like it?
Yeah, it's really peaceful out here by itself.
Come on in.
Inside, a man and a girl watch cartoons. The house in the cartoon is exactly identical to their own house. Two cartoon characters wrestle in a cloud of dust. The girl sleeps sideways on the sofa, and the man watches with a slightly bored expression. As Anthony and Helen enter behind them, they rouse and hurry over to meet them.
Hello? It's me!
Hi, Anthony!
Hi.
Well, well, well!
Hello?
Anthony's home!
Look at this! How do you do?
This is Helen.
Is that right? Helen? Helen, delighted to meet you. Any friend of Anthony's?
Hello.
Is a friend?
This is Uncle Walt, my sister Ethel.
How do you do?
Well, now, did I hear Anthony come in?
Yes, there he is.
This is my mother and father.
Hello.
This is Helen.
Helen Foley.
Oh, Helen. Delighted.
It's a pleasure to meet you, Helen.
She gave me a ride home,
did she?
You don't mean it. Oh, very generous of you.
Yes, well, I'm afraid we had a little accident.
Accident?
Yes, well, I knocked Anthony down while he was riding his bicycle.
Did you? You knock him down?
Yes.
Well, doesn't look like there was any harm done. No, sir. Anthony's fine. Oh, yes. Anthony's fine.
Can Helen stay for supper, Mother?
Oh, no, really. Well, I was just
a good idea.
Of course she can.
The family crowds around her with eager smiles.
Well, that would be lovely.
Can we eat right now?
Yes.
Sure, why not?
Why not? We can eat any time we want.
Oh, yes.
Well, you might want to wash my hands.
Nick, right this way. You may leave this.
And I'll help you with your sweater.
Thank you.
See you in a little while.
Helen turns. The family watches her closely.
Mind the steps.
As soon as she's out of sight, the family starts manically rummaging through the bag and her coat pockets. In the upstairs hallway outside the bathroom, a TV sits on a small accent table and plays black and white cartoons. Helen follows Anthony, her red top standing out sharply against the plain gray walls. Anthony ditches his jacket on the floor.
Anthony.
She picks it up, then notes a framed portrait on the wall. It's a black and white drawing of a cartoon family. No one in the picture has a face. She sweeps her view around, looking for the boy.
Anthony?
She continues down another gray hallway with black and white furnishings.
Anthony?
His uncle holds photos.
Ah, the beach. Ah, I used to love the beach.
Well, then you don't get a light.
Give me a light and you can have a cigarette.
No, you give me a cigarette and you can have a light.
It doesn't work that way. I found it.
Now, don't tell me how it works.
Here, what is that?
You
cigarette for half a you shouldn't be smoking anyway.
Give me the cigarette. Come on.
From the black and white hallway, Helen pokes her head into a bedroom. Four tiny, perfectly identical beds line the wall side by side. In the corner, a girl watches cartoons with her back to the door.
Hello?
The girl doesn't stir or turn around. Anthony joins Helen in the doorway.
That's Sarah, my other sister. She was in an accident.
The view shifts behind the TV to show Sarah's deathly gray face and dark rings around her bugged out eyes. The skin below her nose is perfectly smooth, completely devoid of a mouth. Downstairs, the family investigates Helen's things.
Here I come!
They scramble to put it all away.
I always like to let them know when I'm coming, huh? We're ready to eat now!
What?
Well, let her wait. I'm starving.
Anthony smells the cigarette his sister had just been smoking, and he gives her a disapproving look.
Let's get started. I bet Anthony is really hungry. Hey, come on.
Yeah. Oh, here's your sweater, dear. Well, now, you know, we are so happy that you can eat with us. You know, Anthony is so thoughtful about things like that.
Would you like to sit beside me?
Maybe your mother...
Oh, no. You see, I'm going to have to be fixing supper.
Yes, that's right. You sit right next to Anthony.
Oh, that's yes. Fine. Just fine.
All right.
Yeah, very
all right.
Good. Yes.
She's planted right in front of the TV. The family watches her and the cartoons closely.
Dear, bring one more thing into this house. Do you hear me? One more thing. Not one solitary single thing.
Ah, a mouse! Darling, do you remember where supper is?
You know where it is.
I do.
In the oven. Isn't it, Mother?
Of course. How silly of me.
She never knows.
I'll help you find it, Mother.
We'll be back in just a little while.
We cartoon characters can have a wonderful life if we only take advantage of it. We can do anything we think of. What do you mean, Chem? Well, supposing I decide I want to be a mouse. Click, I'm a mouse. Supposing
this
I
is
want
a good
to be
cartoon.
Myself again.
Mm-hmm.
I'm myself again.
What else do you like?
Nothing else is as good. Anything can happen in cartoons.
Here we go!
Good eatings for everybody.
Yummy, yummy, yummy.
Yes, sir.
All right. Come on.
Now, Anthony, come on, this Anthony. Is yours, dear, in your regular place right there. And Helen, why don't you sit right here next to Anthony? This is for you, Uncle Walt. Wait, right there we
here
are.
Here you go, Mother. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mother. You're welcome, Anthony.
They all gather around a small table in front of the TV. The family eagerly watches Anthony as he takes the first bite.
Yummy, yummy, yummy.
I love this.
I really hate this spot.
Yummy.
Okay.
Helen feigns a smile as she watches the family eat. She peels the top bun off her burger to reveal a sticky mess on her patty.
You won't forget it.
Peanut butter. It's good that way.
Yeah, butter makes the burger.
Oh, that's right.
Wouldn't go down otherwise.
Paper is good for you.
Helen hesitantly takes a small bite.
Another plate for
him. She pretends to enjoy it as she studies the faces of the family, all watching her with delighted smiles.
You eat like this all the time?
Anthony can always have anything he wants.
Anything at all?
You bet.
Oh, don't you think it's good?
Oh, you're young. You need your nutrition. You can't eat like this all the time.
She smiles weakly and glances around, feeling out the room for any agreement. The family simply stares back with confused looks. She glances down to Anthony, who concedes a sorry expression.
It's not good all the time.
No, that's right. It's not.
You're a growing boy.
You're hitting the nail on the head.
So right.
You're a growing boy.
You'd never tell me that.
The family shuts up and recalculates. The TV.
No, not happy birthday. No, not happy birthday.
Oh, of course. It's a birthday supper.
Another birthday? With presents and wishes? I didn't do it.
Anthony glares at her sister, causing her to drop her plate.
It's okay. Everything's okay.
I'm sorry, Anthony. I really have to be going.
Please don't go. Uncle Art's gonna do a trick. He's gonna do a trick.
Oh, you got to stay for the trick.
No, you're just. He's gonna do a trick.
You're back. Great, great.
Do the hat trick, Uncle Walt.
Yes. Oh, yes. Where's the hat?
It's on the TV.
Everyone looks up at the TV, where a top hat has suddenly appeared.
There it is. All right. Come on.
Now then, you've got to stay here. You sit right down there.
The hat trick. Well, let's see. Nothing up the sleeve. There you go. That's it. Nothing up the sleeve. See that?
A spotlight shines on Uncle Walt from seemingly nowhere.
Well, nothing up the sleeve. I beg your pardon. Excuse me. Yes.
Go ahead, Uncle Walt.
Yes. But the hat. Where's the hat? Oh, yes, sir. Nothing, as you can see, in the hat, right? Nothing in the hat. So,
you'll like this. Do it, Uncle Walt.
Yes, sir.
Go ahead, Uncle Walt.
Yes.
Walt holds the hat, his face creasing and contorting with nervous exasperation. He braces himself, closing his eyes as he slowly lowers his hand into the hat. Helen and the family watch with concerned curiosity. Walt opens his eyes as he pulls his hand out.
Ta-da! You see?
A rabbit.
Isn't
this
fun?
We do it a lot.
Yeah, you'll love it here, really.
A giant grotesque rabbit with long sharp teeth emerges from the hat.
Go away!
Anthony smiles as the horrible rabbit sinks back into the hat. Walt collapses into a chair and Helen rushes to grab her things.
Don't go, Helen. I can make it real nice here. I can make the food just the way you said it should be. I can even change the house. Just say it and I can make whatever you like. Just don't.
Anthony pauses and pulls a scrap of torn comic book paper from her bag. Someone has written, "Help us, Anthony is a monster."
I told you. They hate me. They want to send me away to someplace bad, just like my real mother and father did.
That's not right, Anthony. You know we wouldn't do that.
No, we love you, Anthony. Honestly, we do.
Sure.
They're afraid of me. Everybody is. That's why they act that way. And I do everything for them. They could just sit around and watch TV all day. No one has to do a thing. Not a thing. And I'm real good all the time.
That's right. You're a good boy, Anthony. You're a good boy. We love you.
Yeah. Well, then I wonder who wrote this note. I wonder who called me a monster.
It wasn't me, Anthony. Well, I'd never do anything like that. You know that.
Don't look at me.
Me either. Me. It wasn't any of us, Anthony. It was her.
No, it wasn't me.
No, her, Ethel.
Oh,
Ethel.
Yeah, it must have been Ethel. Of course, yeah. It had to have been Ethel. That's right.
Yes, Ethel. There you are. It was Ethel. That's fine.
Oh, great.
It had to have been Ethel. Of course, it was Ethel. Of course.
Oh, I didn't know that. What a big surprise, Ethel, huh?
Go ahead, Anthony. Do it. Do it.
Do what, Ethel?
Now do you realize you'll never get out of here? You think it was an accident you came here? He made it happen. He brought you here, just like he brought us here and kept us here. Just the way he'll keep you here. Maybe he'll get mad at you, like he did to his real sister, and cripple you and take away your mouth so you won't be able to yell at him anymore. Or maybe he'll do to you what he did to his real mother and father.
Time for you to go now, Ethel.
Anthony, don't.
It's a big surprise. I just made it up. I'm wishing you in a cartoon land.
Ethel vanishes from Helen's side.
Jesus.
I told you cartoons are good.
On the TV, Ethel pops into the deranged cartoon.
Anything can happen in them.
We've been expecting you.
A cartoon wolf holds a bloody axe, then turns himself into a dragon. Ethel runs away through a backdrop of ghosts.
Run, Ethel! Run!
Fiery demons reach out at her as she tries to get away, and sharp jagged teeth start to close around her. The family watches in horror as she's eaten by the dragon. Helen makes a break for the door, but opens it to find a giant eyeball peering in from outside.
I can't help it, Helen. I don't want to hurt anybody. All I want is for people not to be afraid of me.
He appears in front of her everywhere she goes.
You don't understand. Nobody does. All I have to do is wish for something and it happens. I can do anything.
The room flashes with bright red and purple lights, and Anthony's eyes widen as he stares vacantly at the TV. The television set goes dark and starts to jump and rumble, sparks and smoke flying around it. Anthony stares, and the others cower as a glowing lightning bolt-shaped rift starts to slowly carve its way across the TV screen. Along the rift, the TV splits into two jagged halves, wildly shaking and rattling. Anthony smirks. Light pours from the crooked broken halves of the TV, and a yellow cartoon tornado slowly emerges and spins through the room, picking up speed. Anthony watches with pure joy as it tears into the furniture and pushes everything in its way aside. As the tornado nears Helen and the others, its spinning begins to slow. Yellow light flashes across their faces as they track its movement before it comes to a stop, revealing a hideous cartoonish monster. Anthony nods approvingly as a second monster appears, this one blowing smoke from its puffed out cheeks. Walt's terrified face is relentlessly blown with smoke as he cowers in the corner. Anthony couldn't be more pleased. A third monster flicks its tongue through a mouth of razor-sharp teeth. Its eyes inflate and bug out of its head. Helen stands firmly.
Wish it away, Anthony. Wish it away!
Anthony's expression sours. He looks to the floor, then back up at a monster whose eyes pop back and forth out of their sockets, its fang jaw dropped to the floor. Smoke blows from its ears and nostrils before it explodes. Anthony darkens further.
I hate this house. I hate everything about it. I wish it away. I wish it all away!
He closes his eyes, and the room goes dark on Helen. He opens his eyes again to find himself in a blurry gray void.
Anthony? Where are we?
Nowhere.
The others?
I sent them where they wanted to go.
The others?
Away from me. It's not fair. You're supposed to be happy when your wishes come true.
Multiple visions of Anthony and Helen wander the space.
Anthony, take us back. Take us back.
You can leave too.
Oh. And go where, Anthony? I've seen what you can do. I know you have a power, a gift that makes you special. You better be careful. For one day, may become too big for you to control. Now maybe, just maybe, together we can master it and learn from it. Use it in ways you never thought of before. I'd like to be your teacher, Anthony. And your student.
You'd stay with me?
Yes.
Always?
Helen rises and faces the boy.
Always.
Okay.
He extends his hand, and she takes it in hers. The foggy gray room disappears around them. They're outside. Her car magically appears in front of him. He turns around and offers her a wide smile.
Anthony, let's not do too much more of that, okay?
Sure.
He walks to the car and opens the driver's seat door. He crawls over to the passenger side as she follows him, sitting behind the wheel.
Look in your pocket.
Her keys.
Never mind.
Her headlights flick on, and she drives them away through the foggy night air. Anthony smiles as he looks over to her from his side. They sit in silence with dim blue light illuminating their faces from outside. Anthony closes his eyes, and a warm red glow quickly replaces the blue. Suddenly, it's daytime. She turns to look at him with a curious smile. He beams back at her. As the car drives through the barren desert, a bright trail of flowers spring to life across the side of the road as they pass. They drive toward the low sun, painting the landscape with a colorful array of flowers. Fade to black. A commercial jet flies through a dark, stormy sky of clouds.
What you're looking at could be the end of a particularly terrifying nightmare. It isn't. It's the beginning. Introducing Mr. John Valentine, air traveler. His destination, the Twilight Zone.
Inside the airplane bathroom, a man panics, curled up into a ball. He shakes his head back and forth, trying to escape his fears. A sign flashes above him. Return to seat.
Ladies and gentlemen, this storm is developing a little faster than we had anticipated. We're maneuvering about, finding the smoothest spots with radar. There's still a chance that we might hit some uh-ohs or whoops-a-daisies. So I'm asking you to return to your seats, fasten your seatbelts. Please extinguish your cigarettes, store anything that might fly about the aircraft, look out the window, and enjoy...
Hello in there. Can you hear me? Hello?
Oh, hi. It's a pasture that's been in there for a long time.
It's Foray.
Oh, yeah. Valentine. I had a feeling about him. White knuckle type.
How are we going to get him out of the bathroom? Is there something wrong?
No.
Mr. Valentine? May I help you?
Just a moment.
In his reality, Valentine cowers against the wall of the small lavatory. He pulls himself to his feet and examines his sweaty reflection in the mirror. He hastily pulls a bottle of pills out from his bag and shakes a few into his hand. He chokes them down with a small gulp of water. He washes his face with a few splashes from the sink and goes back to his reflection, trying to calm down.
Dion, why don't you knock? Something could be wrong.
Let's give him a few more minutes.
He emerges.
Are you okay?
No problem.
Look, Mr. Valentine, I know how you feel. Lots of people are nervous about flying. But if you look at statistics, you're safer up here than on the ground.
That's right, safer than your own bathroom.
No, I'll be perfectly fine.
Oh, there. Everything's going to be fine. I'm going to help you back to your seat.
Actually, the chances of drowning in the bathroom, bathtub, something like 800 thousandths of a percent, there's air crash fatalities. From last year's figures, the number of passengers who traveled by air last year is equal to the population of the whole country. That's 426,504,000 terrestrials who die accidentally at home. They outnumber the people on it. Much more than... And whereas driving, forget it. I mean, the percentage of people who die driving, 23% of Do I need my boarding pass?
The stewardesses help him into his seat. An older gentleman gets their attention.
That a boy.
I think I spilled my drink. Yes. I think I spilled my drink.
Oh, I'm sorry, sir. Here, let me fix you up. Put these things away here.
She finds Valentine's book.
Microchip Logic, The Liberation of the Left Brain. Science fiction fan, huh?
It's the textbook. Computers.
Do you really read this stuff?
I wrote it.
My goodness, so you did. I tell you what, we'll put this away and you try to get some sleep.
No. I'd like you to leave the light on.
Okay, I'll take this, okay? Yeah, come on. I tell you what, I'll put this in a safe place. Look, you're gonna be fine, so cheer up, okay? Get me some water. Let's get the seatbelt fastened. Okay?
What's something wrong?
Oh, no, everything's fine. Look, we're not supposed to do this.
What?
But I have these sedatives. They might help you sleep.
No, it's all right. I don't need anything. I'll be fine.
You're very mild.
No, thank you, but I'll be all right.
A girl snaps a Polaroid.
This will cost you $4.
What did you say?
Only kidding.
Well, I'm not kidding. We've got to get you back to your seat now.
Here.
Oh, no. We've got to get you back here. Here we go. Now let's fasten your seatbelt.
I don't need my seatbelt fastened.
Yes, you do. We don't want you to fall out. We?
I'm not going to fall out.
If you sit here, you won't. Okay?
Okay.
Are you okay?
Yeah.
Sure?
Yes, I'm sure.
Look, I'm Dion. Anything you need, call me.
Well, thank you, but I'm sure I'll be fine. Really, I'll be fine.
Dion's eyebrows raise in disbelief as she heads off. Mr. Valentine looks across the aisle to the little girl sorting through her photographs and pulls a cigarette out. He puts it between his lips. He falls back with relief as he lights it up. The little girl has a ventriloquist puppet.
You heard the captain. No smoking. N-O-S-M-O-K-I-N-G. No smoking.
He levels his gaze at the girl, then leans back to face forward. A large man in the seat ahead of him glares back to him. Valentine acknowledges his cigarette and snuffs it in the armrest's ashtray. The man goes back to minding his own business. Across the aisle, the girl lies down, curled up with her dummy. Valentine heaves a sigh before a lightning bolt startles him again. He rummages for his pill bottle and opens it, but thinks better of himself, putting it back down. He pulls out a nearby newspaper, and the front page headline reads, "Airline Disaster Worst Ever." Lightning flashes outside, pulling his attention out the window. He furrows his brow as he focuses on the lights on the tip of the wing. He rubs his eyes and refocuses out the window. Something moves on the wing of the plane. He puts on his glasses and peers out again, squinting hard to see through the torrential rain. He leans forward to look out a different window. Outside, a creature on one of the wing engines gets struck by lightning. A crowd of passengers gathers from all over the plane to look out the windows at the commotion. Faces gather around the small windows and Mr. Valentine looks out again. There doesn't seem to be anything unusual on the wing anymore.
There was somebody out there. You've got to believe me.
I saw him, green and slimy.
Leave the poor man alone.
He's only trying to help. You've got to humor them.
It was lightning. At first, I thought it was an animal, some kind of bird or something, but it was a man. There was flames coming out of the engine, and then a flash, and then smoke. Maybe it was a technician who was caught in the plane when it took off. Oh my God, how did he survive out there? The air's too thin, the blast of the wind. It's so cold.
Mr. Valentine slows his breathing as his stress melts away into confusion.
It's impossible, isn't it?
Dion offers him the sedatives again, and Valentine lapses.
Oh my God, I feel so stupid.
He washes the pills down with a cup of water. Valentine laughs nervously as the man in front of him turns his scowl back away.
Can you imagine? A naked man crawling along the wing of an airplane at 35,000 feet.
There's no need to feel embarrassed, Mr. Valentine. Just try to get some sleep.
It's amazing. The mind, how the eyes can make you see something that isn't even there.
The other stewardess talks with the pilot as they take glances toward Valentine.
Look, you're just going to have to deal with it.
It's all right. You don't have to stay with me. I know you have other passengers to attend to.
I'm happy to sit with you till you sleep.
No. It's probably easier for me if I'm alone.
Sure?
I'm sure. I'm drowsy already.
He pretends to fall asleep, then shoots her a smile.
See?
She leaves, and he half-heartedly watches her go. Peering over his shoulder, he pulls a blanket around himself. He puts down the armrest again, leans his seat back, and fluffs a pillow to try to get comfortable. He stares ahead, his eyes quickly growing heavy. He takes a deep breath, slowly closing his eyes as he drifts closer to sleep. A flash of lightning startles him through a window, so he closes the plastic blind. As he lies back down, his eyes start to wander again. His gaze lands back on the closed window. Taking control of his agonizing curiosity, He turns back away from it and tries to fall asleep again. The view slowly narrows in on Valentine's face, his resting expression tinged with dissatisfaction and annoyance. His eyes open again. His fear getting the better of him, he turns and opens the blind. A slimy blue monster stares at him from right outside the window. He flees from his seat, only to be pinned down by airline staff and security. Amid the hysteria, the young girl snaps another picture. Valentine is held down by the heavy man seated in front of him. The man has a pistol strapped to his ankle.
Don't touch me!
I need security. You want me to take care of this?
No, it's all right. You'll be all right.
You gotta let this play.
Just sure. Okay, mother,
you gotta get outside. You gotta get outside. You gotta
get
outside.
Please sit down. Everybody sit down. Get in your seat. I want all the passengers in their seat.
You gotta get this out of the sky.
Yes, thank you very much.
We're gonna get this.
Okay.
Fine, sit down.
It's all right.
Get this out of the ground. You gotta get this out of the sky.
You know where? You know where you are. Valentine.
Get us on the ground.
Relax.
Take care of the little girl. Okay. Come here,
Tommy.
That's it. Relax.
Come on, honey. You belong over here.
Mommy!
Oh, that girl. That's it.
Just take a couple deep breaths. Everything's going to be
okay. God, what has she done this time?
Take deep breaths, Mr. Valentine. Deep, long breath. That's it. Slow, relax. That's it. We're safe. We're going to have a little talk. What seems to be the problem?
Would you look out that window, please?
The pilot, still holding Valentine down, peers out the window, then shuts the blind.
Was I supposed to see out there?
Valentine miserably shakes his head and cries.
Nothing. Nothing at all. I'm sorry, I shouted.
Mr. Valentine, you gotta see this my way. I'm the first officer of an airplane in a severe storm. Now I have an irrational passenger. You're threatening the safety of this aircraft and you're frightening the other passengers. You either calm down or we're going to handcuff you.
Listen, there's something wrong with this airplane. I don't care what happens to me, but if somebody doesn't do something about it, we're all going to die. That's D-I-E, die!
You big silly. You used to be a normal person.
Shelly.
Sit down, darling. Come on, okay?
It's Valentine. What do you think's wrong with this aircraft?
There's an engine out.
Which one?
The one on the outside. Outboard, number one. It's out, isn't it?
Makes you think that.
Never mind about that. It's true, isn't it?
9 minutes ago, outboard number one was struck by lightning. There was a flame out and we lost it.
Lightning?
Lightning. Mr. Valentine. This aircraft has four engines. The possibility of us losing one of the remaining three is remote in the extreme.
You're sure it was just lightning?
Absolutely. Listen, we're going to be landing in about 20 minutes. There is the highest probability that we'll survive this flight.
Okay.
We'll see you downstairs in 20 minutes. Sit down.
Buckle them up!
The plane starts to rattle and shake as luggage falls out from the overhead compartments.
Are you okay?
Passengers brace themselves in their seats as Mr. Valentine takes another look out the window to the damaged wing. He sees sheets of metal flapping in the wind. He falls back into his seat. Passengers hold each other close. The young girl bounces joyfully.
No.
Valentine presses his face to the window to find the monster clawing away at the wing's other engine. Sparks fly from the engine. Valentine runs his hands through his hair, silently freaking out as the other passengers cry out nearby. He sees the girl with her camera, and snatches it from her hands to take a picture of the monster. He shakes the photo as it slowly develops in his hands. The monster pulls a chunk of metal out of the wing and throws it into the engine, causing it to explode. The photo develops, only to have captured Valentine's own reflection in the glass from the flash of the bulb. The engine explodes in flames as the monster sabotages it further. Valentine notices a heavy metal canister that rolled to his feet amid the shaking. Decisively, he picks up the canister and bashes it against the window, trying to get outside. The security guard wrestles him to the ground. Valentine takes notice of the sidearm strapped to the man's ankle and wrestles it out. He points it to the window. He blasts the window, causing the air pressure in the cabin to suck him halfway out the plane. Papers fly amongst the terrified passengers. The in-flight movie projector pops open. Dion struggles on the ground as the service cart crashes around him. With his upper half leaning out the window, Valentine fires shots at the monster. The monster scurries away from the engine and runs across the wing up to Valentine. It bites his gun, easily destroying it. Valentine gapes at the remains of the pistol in his hand. The monster reacts to a sound coming from the wing. The plane finally makes it below the clouds and descends on a shimmering city below. The monster grabs hold of Mr. Valentine's face in one of its big clawed hands. It lets him go, and wags a finger at the man with a smile. It runs off down the wing and takes flight, performing flips through the air as Valentine is left to watch, slime freezing on his face. It flies off through the clouds as Valentine passes out. The plane lands. Later, Valentine reclines on a gurney. He wears a straitjacket.
That's exactly how it happened. I'm practically a hero. Would you believe that?
If my mother broke it, you would have never gotten this baby down.
I had a hell of a night. We got the storm, we got the flame out, and then that freak show.
Not to mention the gun. The gun was awful.
He didn't have a gun.
He had a gun?
No, he didn't have a gun. It was my gun. I'm in the authorized.
It was so crazy. He smashed the window. What was he trying to do? Get out?
It's claustrophobia. They'd rather fall to the ground than stay aboard. I've seen it happen. I've seen it.
Rocco, right? I knew he was frightened, but I didn't think he was crazy. Dion, he said he saw something out on the wing alive.
Matt, we lost number one. Check out number two, will you?
All right, somebody give me a light. I want the gear pinned. Let's chalk these tires.
Right,
Franco, let me know what's going on with these flaps.
Right.
I want to know if there's any fuel leaking out of this baby. And get these people out of here.
A group of servicemen examine the destroyed wing and engines. One shines a flashlight into the shredded side of the wreckage.
Max!
The other serviceman sees claw marks on the engine.
Toledo. Hey, you guys, what happened up there?
Mr. Valentine giggles to himself in the back of an ambulance.
That's enough of that noise, huh? Who needs it anyway? How about a little music?
Sure.
The driver turns. It's the portly hitchhiker.
Let the midnight
special.
Hey, that's
me.
I love Credence. So you had a big scare up there, huh? Oh, yeah. Want to see something really scary?
There is a fifth dimension beyond that which is known to man. It is the middle ground between light and shadow, between science and superstition, and it lies between the pit of man's fears and the summit of his knowledge. This is the dimension of imagination. It is an area which we call the Twilight Zone.
Credits. Directed by. Prologue and Segment 1, John Landis. Segment 2, Steven Spielberg. Segment 3, Joe Dante. Segment 4, George Miller. Prologue and Segment 1 written by John Landis. Segment 2 screenplay by George Clayton Johnson and Richard Matheson and Josh Rogan. Story by George Clayton Johnson. Segments 3 and 4 screenplay by Richard Matheson. Segment 3 based on a story by Jerome Bixby. Segment 4 based on a story written by Richard Matheson. Produced by Steven Spielberg and John Landis. Executive producer Frank Marshall. Inspired by Twilight Zone. Created by Rod Sterling. Directors of Photography. Prologue and Segment 1, Stephen Larner. Segments 2 and 4, Alan Davio. Segment 3, John Ora. Production designer James D. Bissell. Film editors. Prologue and Segment 1, Malcolm Campbell. Segment 2, Michael Kahn ACE. Segment 3, Tina Hirsch ACE. Segment 4, Howard Smith. Music by Jerry Goldsmith. Associate producers. Prologue and Segment 1, George Folsey Jr. Segment 2, Kathleen Kennedy. Segment 3, Michael Finnell, John Davison. Special makeup designed and created by Rob Button. Segment 4, special makeup created by Craig Reardon and Michael McCracken. Casting by Mike Fenton and Jane Feinberg, Marcy Leroff. Starring Dan Aykroyd, Albert Brooks, Scatman Crothers, John Lithgow, Vic Morrow, Kathleen Quinlan featuring, Segment 1, Charles Hallahan, Doug McGrath. Segment 2, Murray Matheson, Bill Quinn, Helen Shaw, Summa Diamond, Peter Bracco, Martin Garner, Priscilla Pointer, Tanya Fenmore, Laura Mooney, Evan Richards, Christopher Eisenman, Scott Neves. Segment 3, Kevin McCarthy, Jeremy Licht, William Schallert, Nancy Cartwright, Patricia Berry, Dick Miller, Bill Mumy, Jeffrey Bannister. Segment 4, Abby Lane, John Dennis Johnston, Donna Dixon, Charles Knapp, Christina Nigra, Larry Cedar, Edward Franz, Margaret Wheeler, Jeffrey Weissman, Margaret Fitzgerald. More credits roll. Thank you. Production logos. This motion picture copyright 1983 Warner Brothers Incorporated. Screenplays copyright 1983 Warner Brothers Incorporated. All original music compositions copyright Warner Tamerlane Publishing Corporation. The story, all names, characters and incidents portrayed in this production are fictitious. No identification with actual persons, places, buildings and products is intended or should be inferred. Distributed by Warner Brothers Pictures, a Time Warner company.